Virginia. William Hill, America's number one sportsbook, is now here. And we have a special 2021 offer to help you bet on all your favorite sports risk-free. Download the William Hill Sportsbook app, and when you sign up, you can get started with a risk-free bet of up to $2,021. Use promo code RADIORF.
Terms and conditions apply. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call, text, or chat our confidential and toll-free helpline at 1-888-532-3500.
Let's make it interesting with William Hill Sportsbook.
Hey there, it's Rachel Mullins, the host of Hashtag No Filter Fridays on Public House Media.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Caught Listening, the baseball podcast that goes beyond the white lines. Christian Eimel here with you, broadcasting as always part of the Public House Media Network. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, share us with your friends and family wherever you get your podcasts, including now on Amazon Podcasts, which we're pretty excited about here. You can also get in touch with the show on social media. Search Caught Listening by Public House Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can also email the show. caughtlistening@gmail.com. Really excited about this guest because it's a topic that hasn't really been discussed much this year, if at all. It was the hot button topic when it first happened, and then once we turned our focus away from collegiate athletics and to the pro world, it kind of gotten forgotten and swept under the rug. But it's incredibly interesting, difficult, detailed, and there's a lot to unpack with it. So I'm excited to talk about that, but also excited because he's a good friend, one of the folks that I credit a lot to my career, because he did help me get my first job out of college, and he is the only college coach to ever see me take batting practice. And I think I speak for the rest of college coaches when they say, thank God they are the only coach, he's the only one. But he's the head coach of my alma mater, Hofstra University baseball coach, John Russo. Roos, it's good to talk to you, pal.
Truly my pleasure. It's been awesome to see your career and to just be a small part of it. I remember our summers up in Vermont fondly, and just awesome to see what you're doing for baseball and everything you've got going. So anytime you need me, I'm there for you.
I appreciate that. And real quick, before we get into this, because one of the things that I didn't notice, I didn't really know, is we think of summer wood bat leagues, and we think of them as an opportunity for the kids playing, going into their next year, get a little bit of difference, get more reps in, obviously, but then also get a little bit of a different feel in how to compete with different guys, and you're seeing people that maybe you don't see every day. But what I didn't understand really until I got up there with you in Vermont was what it does for the coaches as well, because the 2 years that you and I were in Vermont together in the summers of 2011 and 2012, you were just transitioning to take over as the head coach at Hofstra as an assistant. And you had guys who were, on your staff that were assistant coaches that were hoping to move up those ranks, and also players who had just finished and were hoping to get into coaching. The importance of summer ball is almost just as much for the coaches as it is for the players.
Agreed. I mean, we had Clint Brown on that staff, and now he's a big-time scout with the Cardinals and really high up in the organization. And I think we all had a feeling that Clint would make it somewhere, somehow, and then, what is this, 9 years later, as he has. And, just a neat thing, and that happens out in summer ball, especially when you have a great place. And even for you in your career, to know that it got started up there. And, I think we instantly knew you were one of the best radio guys. When you get a good head coach, there's a really good head coach. When you see a good player, he's a really good player. And it's just something that, unless you get a chance to experience, it's hard to sell. But invaluable to my growth for sure, my summers in Vermont.
Yeah, and I mean, the players that you and I had on that team, I mean, Ty Rogers, a major leaguer.
Amazing.
Yeah, incredible. And then obviously guys like Brian O'Grady, who played incredibly well in the minors, and
he
all
made
throughout.
It.
Yeah, he did.
With
That's right. Yeah, he did. So it's just great to see. And it's not just the Cape Cod League like everybody thinks. So it's awesome. And I've encouraged this on the show multiple times. If you're in a small town that has a summer league, a summer collegiate league, go out and support and spend the money there and help out, because it's a lot of fun. Be a host family, because those people are incredible. You and I have had host families ourselves, so we know how important those people are. Coach, I want to get to this, because it's interesting. And like I said at the top, it kind of got swept under the rug after the NCAA men's basketball tournament got canceled, but their COVID has impacted so much in this world. And before I get into it, first and foremost, Stacy, the kids, how is everybody handling what has been the weirdest year that we have ever experienced?
You know, I think the thing that's getting missed right now in the whole world is like the just the mental well-being of these kids from, let's say, 6 years old to 22 years old, because, you know, we're adults. We can handle all of this. You throw about anything at us, we'll figure it out. But, you know, this is all new to them, and, you know, not going out to hang out with their friends, to have restrictions with going to school, you know, some of them only doing online, some of them doing hybrid, you know, missing recess, you know, just all the social aspects of life that they were used to and that they was taken away. You know, kids don't understand that. And I'm really anxious to see, you know, how that plays out with all these kids. I mean, just taking away baseball with rosters and stuff. But, you know, for me, it's like trying to keep my kids going and keep them busy. You know, whatever travel I can get them into, I try to do. I try to get my youngest ones into fitness and getting them out of the house and trying to set up as safe as play dates as you can so they can still socialize and see friends. But, you know, obviously we need the world to get back to normal, but I'm just really, you know, you're always worried about your kids, and I've been really at high risk working about my kids the last 8 months.
Yeah, 100%, and especially, you know, can't stress the importance of last week, Mental Health Awareness Week, obviously,
right.
as well, and just how it's been one of the biggest things, you know, for me as well, is just seeing the anxiety. And even me personally, as someone who never really felt like an anxious person, I've definitely, it's grown over the last 8 months. It's been scary to look at. But, you know, for you, not only do you have your kids at home, you got your boys on the Hofstra baseball team who, and I want to specifically talk about your class of 2020, your seniors who graduated, who were supposed to walk across the stage. This was their final year of collegiate baseball. And for some of them, it was probably the last time they were going to play baseball in a setting like that. But then for others, it was the door to a professional contract. What was the moment like, and what can you tell me about the conversations you've had with your seniors once the decision was made that, hey, we're ending everything and 2020 is over?
You know, it was terrible because, like, when it first happened, we were under the impression of, hey, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, this is just shutting down for there. We're going to try to get going back here at the end of March. Because at that time, you know, March Madness was starting to happen and everything. And then, you know, the Rudy Gobert incident happened. And then I think the whole world changed a lot in the next 24 hours. And I had released my kids maybe at 12 o'clock on that Wednesday, and then by 2:15 or 3 o'clock or maybe 4 o'clock, I can't remember the exact time, but just like everybody else by Twitter, you know, social media, we find out, hey, the spring season is now canceled. You know, I didn't get a call from an AD. I didn't get a call because he didn't know either. You know, it just got released over social media. And then the kids are all texting me and calling me and like, is this true? And I'm like, I'm trying to find out. And, you know, and then, of course, over the next 24 hours, we found out everything was true and everything was finished. And just like you, my first thoughts were the seniors, you know, like what's going to happen to them? How can we help them? What can we do for them? Their parents are asking questions. They're asking questions. And I don't want to ever say one kid was more important than the other. But, you know, the juniors and freshmen were less, you know, the seniors were just my big worry. And so then we're following everything. And on Monday, you know, 2 weeks later, they give them all their year of eligibility back, and they give everybody their year of eligibility back across the board. And, you know, the thing they didn't give them, though, was their scholarships back across the board, you know, because people in athletic departments didn't have a plan for this. And I don't think Hofstra or any university that didn't, you know, just have money for seniors laying around is something that should have been unexpected or thought of. And so then, you know, the kids are like, well, hey, I may want to come back. You know, is my scholarship still there? And we're like, well, I don't know, you know. And so we didn't have a lot of answers for them after they got their eligibility back. And then, you know, when you lost, you know, facility rentals, when you're losing March Madness, you know, you can see it across the country. A lot of Division I schools just had a hard time dealing with that. So to have extra scholarship for these kids just wasn't in the cards. So then I'm having to talk to them about coming back, but also to come back on their own dime. And then on top of that, figure out how to come back. You know, are they going to take, you know, master's classes? Are they going to take extra classes and add to their minor? Are they're going to, you know, maybe wait to walk and not graduate and finish it in the fall, so then they can only have one class to take in the spring? I mean, there was just a million things that were having to get figured out. And, you know, at the end of the day, I was super proud that I got like 7 of our seniors to come back, but I had 13 of them. And, you know, to have like Miles Menza and Tyler White and, you know, kids career end that wanted to kind of continue or go on or would have liked to have had some finality is still to this moment really tough for me to deal with. And, but, you know, we, you know, basically got the seniors figured out. And now we're on to a new problem. The new problem is the juniors, sophomores, and freshmen that are in your program, because you got to start putting together recruiting classes. And, you know, and none of these kids have had plans to stay at school for 5 years. Usually want to do 4 years and graduate. And now you have the fifth year. Do you do it here? Do you give them their scholarship back? Who do you recruit for the 21 class? Who do you recruit for the 22 class? You know, it's been a really like mathematical nightmare, to be honest.
And that's part of it that has been the part that I couldn't wrap my head around when it was first announced, and I still haven't been able to 7 months later, is it's not just, okay, you know, giving the seniors back their year of eligibility is great. It's for the finality of that, that's tremendous. But a high school senior doesn't get his year of eligibility back where he can go back to high school and he can wait this out and get back into a normal recruiting class. He's now got to go, and I'm sure there are some freshmen, you know, incoming freshmen, high school seniors that you've recruited who had goals and had, you know, aspirations of being an integral part of the 2021 Hofstra baseball team and their season. And now they've got the questions of, is that still an option for me because these seniors are coming back? Same thing with juniors, same thing with sophomores for that matter. But it just never, the recruiting side of it, to me, it's almost as if you completely blew it up and just handed every coach the pieces and said, figure it out.
You know, it's incredible. Last week we started practice, and so when I got some of the seniors to return, I ended up having 8 of our top 9 offensive players return. And we were top 25 in the country in average when everything happened. And so on paper, you know, we're looking really good offensively. And then last week we get started and I'm like really excited about the team we're going to have offensively. And then I looked around and just like you said, there was, you know, 8 freshmen that we brought in that we thought were going to have a chance to play as freshmen because those kids were supposed to have graduated, Rob Weisheyer and Alex Sika and Brian Goulard. And, you know, you'd think that they were going to be out, and here they are back. And I'm looking at these freshmen, and I'm like, what a raw deal they got. They don't get to play in the springtime. They had trouble playing all summer. Here they are, fall's getting really abbreviated because of all the COVID testing. I mean, we're only practicing 4 hours a week right now. And then in the spring, you know, unless there's injuries, they're not going to play very much in the spring. And, you know, what a just a rough year overall that they're going to have to put in. And so, you know, I even started it this morning, bringing some freshmen by that just have honest conversations with them and try to talk it out and understand it. And, you know, a thing that's really for me is the NCAA moved the roster number to unlimited for this year. But I don't see how it's not unlimited the next 3 years also, because you still have juniors that are going to return. You still have sophomores that are going to come back a fifth year. And yeah, still have freshmen there, you know, so like that cycle doesn't end for 3 more years of what they created by allowing the extra year of eligibility. And so like if they were to come out in mid-March and say, hey, we're going to go back to 35 next year, I don't know how schools across the country would even begin to do it. And, you know, it's just a really, really raw deal. And like I said at the beginning, and I said again, is, you know, I've been very aware of their mental well-being and trying to have honest conversations and be like, hey, I understand that if you get a raw deal here this year, but there isn't really good deals outside of here either. If you go up To Wilmington, they've got 58 guys on the roster. If you go to Towson, they've got 50-some guys on the roster. Like, any school in the SEC has 50 guys on the roster. Right. Like, I mean, everybody's high numbers right now because when they took the unlimited, everybody was like, hey, we'll bring in as many as we can and be a super squad this year.
Yeah.
And they're going to be. Division I of baseball across the board is going to be great. And then take away the fact that you've made the MLB draft only five rounds.
Yeah.
We have 35 rounds worth of draft that you were expecting.
Well,
gone.
And I want to ask you, about that too. And we're talking with John Russo, head baseball coach at Hofstra University on Long Island. It plays in the CAA, a very competitive CAA, by the way. For those of you who have heard of a guy named Justin Verlander, his school used to be in the CAA. He pitched there. The draft being shortened and whittled down to just five rounds, and the Rob Manfred's umbrella of one baseball and eventually taking control over his goal, taking control over a lot of this and, you know, shifting the draft further back, which I like. I like the idea of shifting the draft back past the College World Series. But what did that do? I mean, the draft going from 40 to 5, you look at all these kids who dream of having their, whether it's in the 30th round, the 39th, or the first, you have kids that dream of getting their name called. And you, Hofstra has become a program now where prior to 2020, I mean, it was only 2 years, but you had four guys in the last 2 years going in the draft, including in 2018, you had a couple of third rounders. So this is a program now that is getting draft picks. How, I mean, what was that like for your seniors, for your juniors, your draft eligible guys to know just how much tougher it was going to be to hear their name called?
Well, so like one example for me would be Austin Gaudier. He, at the time of everything, he was leading the CAA in every offensive category. And even though we were only 15 games in, he won, you know, basically any award that they said, you know, he's Division I baseball. It said, hey, the best player in the league is him. So let's just assume that he has a pretty decent chance of being drafted. Like, here he is having this year. Here we are planning him leaving. Here I am bringing in a shortstop to replace him. And then it goes to five rounds. Listen, I'm ecstatic to have Austin back this year. But I also have a freshman that thought he was going to play some. And then now the draft is only 20 rounds. Austin's a year older. You never know if age will start to work against him. You don't know if he's going to have as good a year this coming spring. So what happens if he doesn't? Well, now he still has a fifth year to come back for his senior, which I'll take him back because I love him and he's a great player. But now the kid that came in to back him up is 2 years out away from playing and not going to get on the field at all. Cause listen, you just don't sit Austin every, you play him 55 games. If he's ready to play, he's the best player in the league. And you know, like that's the numbers and the stuff that all of this created. And you know, Major League Baseball, you know, not having a minor league system right now is borderline incredible.
Yeah.
You know, think about all those kids throughout the country that haven't, you know, that haven't been able to work out, to have an affiliation with anybody, to know what's going on. And they're trying to decide, do I get a job and start my life, or am I still a Major League Baseball player? You know, like they don't have any answers right now. And, you know, everybody's trying to run a business. And I think at some point, COVID or not, that he can come up and say, hey, I'm going to have 100 teams, or I'm going to have this type of system. I mean, a lot of people are hanging in the wind, and it doesn't seem like everybody's giving us enough information right now to make decisions to help these kids out.
It's one of the scariest things, again, is the future of not just, and we've talked about it on this show, the future of those communities that could be losing minor league baseball and what that
Incredible.
Could do. But You what we forget to talk about is the impact of those players. You know, we talk about, yes, you know, there's the fan, there's the kid who, you know, it was his summer job for 3 years, taking tickets at the ballpark, whatever it is. But the players who literally have gone, you know, 18, 19, 22 years of their lives, you know, looking to continue to get paid to play baseball is an incredible opportunity. There's so much about it from a roster standpoint that just it blows my mind. And then not only that, you know, and we talked about it, you know, you're having to deal with the you know, being very aware of the mental well-being of your family, being aware of the mental well-being of your players and your staff, and working the roster. And then to not only do that, but now, and I don't know what it's like for you. I mean, me working on the front office on the business side of things, trying to get partners and season ticket holders to pony up for 2021 when they don't know what 2021 looks like. I can't imagine what it's like for you in terms of scheduling, in terms of, you know, and all the other stuff that goes with being a head coach.
Right. Flying, travel restrictions. Right now you've got, you know, New York has about every state in the country on their restrictions list.
Yep.
And so, like, you're dealing with all those problems. And, you know, you just said it and we did it. But, you know, when you didn't have summer ball, you could almost ruin one of the greatest things. And I think they're going to survive one more year, but they can't survive a second summer of not having summer baseball, because part of the thing that you and I loved most maybe about Vermont was McGillicuddy's or Pinkies on Main Street.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Ben and Jerry's, just
yep.
the places that we went and visited and the hometown feeling of being there for the summer. And that's all across the country and everywhere. And, you know, and not having any information. So I haven't, you know, I have a schedule for the springtime, but I told every guy that we're supposed to go play, not sure if we're going to be able to fly, you know, not sure if we're going to be have any restrictions on going there. Like, what if we go somewhere and then come back after 4 days and New York puts us on 14 days quarantine?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there is just a lot of there, but I don't talk about that out loud, to be honest, because, you know, these kids already have enough to deal with. I just say, hey, we'll deal with today, and, you know, hopefully there'll be a vaccine in a month. Hopefully the world's changed in 3 months. The one thing I do hold on to is this, is I think no matter what, the NCAA is going to have March Madness this year. They can't survive without
yeah.
it. And people don't know that March Madness is what drives college sports. People would usually vote football, but football isn't what makes the money. It's March Madness that makes the money. And when last year they only paid out a third of that to colleges, that's why colleges struggled so bad financially. I really think, you know, the NCAA, I think the world is going to do whatever it can to have March Madness. So if there's March Madness, I got to think there's baseball and other sports in the springtime. And so, you know, that's what I'm hoping for. And that's what I'm really following right now, is when the basketball season is going to start, you know, how much of a basketball season is going to go. And that's really my next hope, to be honest. And college football seems to be, you know, it's doing really well right now. You look at Texas A&M the other day and had, you know, great crowds and great games. And, you know, it just seemed like starting to get back a little bit closer to normal for us.
And that's the hope, and that was, you know, that's a whole nother topic that we can it's one of those things that it popped into my mind, and it, when, you know, I saw programs cutting baseball, cutting lacrosse, swimming, tennis, all these sports, and my mind goes, I understand you're losing out on the March Madness money, but these are programs that not every player is on full scholarship. So
right.
not only are
it's the easy way out,
exactly
the easy way out. And, you know, because, you know, it, your job's to get out and fundraise and to get sponsorships and talk to people and talk truths and explain everything. And when you cut a program, that's an easy way to fix a problem. But, you know, we're all enrollment driven businesses.
Right.
And so, like, we use athletics, you get students come here, that helps the enrollment of the overall university. And so one hand washes the other and you use each other. When you cut a sport, I mean, you are just fixing an easy problem without doing any work or anything. That should be the last and a far last, you know, decision to make, to cut any athletic program and take any kid's scholarship. And, you know, I can't be more embarrassed or more upset when I see anything happen to, like, a LaSalle or a
yeah.
Furman or any of those, because I know the inner circles of that type of deal, and we're all enrollment. You know, at the end of the day, I'm a recruiter for Hofstra University, not just Hofstra's baseball team, and I want kids to be at the school, and I want the school to be great and improve it. That's why I'm always worried about academics and kids, because that's the most important thing, and then we win some ball games.
Yeah, 100%. Talking with John Russo, head baseball coach at Hofstra University, my alma mater, to just real quick before we kind of wrap things up to kind of break away from COVID, I was looking a little bit, and so your first year at Hofstra, if I remember correctly, was 2008, correct? That first season?
It was.
Yeah,
right.
So you came in as an assistant with Pat Anderson, who had spent years in the minors and then now is back in minor league baseball. And then after the 2011 season, my senior year, Pat and PA said he was leaving and you were going to take over as the head coach for the 2012 season. And I was doing a little bit of research here. And since your arrival in 2008, I don't know if you know this, but 7 Hofstra baseball players have been drafted prior to UNPA arriving in 2008. Only 5 had ever been drafted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and what I love is when I showed up on campus in the fall of 2007, we were a 30-loss program. And now
trust me, I had 19 players, and you talk about your BP. I was thinking I'd recruit of you if I would have saw you swing. So at least got you out for a season.
that was the scary part too. I was ready to go back to school to be able to play for you. But 7 draft picks, 2 in the third round in Brian Verbitsky and John Rooney in 2018. I remember when Danny Poma got drafted in the 10th round, and we were all so excited. When Ethan Paquette got drafted, you and I were together when Paquette got drafted, and it was great for that. What do you attribute, because it's Long Island, New York, it's the middle, you know, playing in February in New York outside is not fun. In a conference that had been dominated for years by ODU and UNCW and VCU and all these other, you know, what do you attribute the turnaround to? Because this is now, like you mentioned, you know, Austin Gaudier, best player in the league. And that kind of stuff 10 years ago didn't happen at Hofstra.
Well, you know, I think it started with Patrick. Patrick was, I think he brought a professional attitude to here. He'd spent 10 years in professional. He had previously coached here, so he had some love for Hofstra University. I think coming with him, I had at least experience of what good ball players would look like. And I remember many midnights, him and I in here at the office and talking about what we wanted Hofstra to be and how we wanted to look. And, you know, one of the thoughts I had early on was we just really needed to get good academic kids and athletic kids. And because, you know, Hofstra is a really highly thought of academic school, but not great for baseball. And so I thought, why get away from that, but just try to find kids. And so we put really big standards on what we were looking for kids. I think that helped create a culture. And then, you know, what we did in that early time in 2008 and 2009 really reaped its benefits in 2012 with the best team in Hofstra history, 34 wins, second in the CAA, and really set the foundation for my career and the building of Hofstra baseball. And that was a lot of work that Patrick and I had done early. And I think it's all based off the kids. You know, you just got to people, you know, the catchphrase of the world right now, culture, culture, culture. Mm-hmm. But it is a true thing when you have to spend 35 days with a guy and really be able to count on another person. And, you know, especially with this COVID, you're having to trust a kid to stay inside of his pod and not go out drinking on Friday and Saturday nights and expose, you know, basically 34 other guys to it. So I tell this to the team all the time. One guy can shut this whole program down at any given moment. And, you know, here we are right now, over 2 months into testing, and we've had 46 guys on the roster and not one positive COVID test. And I'm not saying the COVID is away or anything to that nature, because we definitely have had our positive tests at the school. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying I've had 46 guys do the right thing. And I think that is the biggest thing I'm proud of, is that I can really depend on these kids. And then, you know, hopefully with our experience with baseball, we can help develop them. I mean, nobody knew John Rooney. You know, he didn't do a perfect game. He didn't do prep baseball. There isn't any founding. You know, he was from Hoosick Valley and, you know, a town of 3,000. He threw 84, 86 when he got here. But then, you know, 3 years later, he developed and got better and was able to be a third round pick. And Danny Poma the same way. He had 4 draft years happen before he finally got picked, but he ended up being an All-American. And it's about confidence and putting a kid in strong, strong area to get builder and become the best he can be. And, you know, same for Verbitsky, all those kids, you know, they did a lot of himself, but you just wanted to put them in places to support themselves and make baseball important. And I've told you this before, but I'm from the South, and so I have a Southern mentality when it comes to playing the game of baseball and how you should attack and do it. And I think that helps a lot with the kids, that I'm not afraid of them making mistakes or being aggressive. And, you know, their whole life they kind of become a little bit controlled up in the North, and mm-hmm. they play station-to-station baseball or looking over their shoulder, worried about they're going to get yelled at for making mistakes by the, you know, Mets and Yankee fans.
Right.
And, but I just don't teach it that way. And so it's been a fun atmosphere to put these kids in. I've been really proud and appreciative of all the kids I've coached. And definitely appreciative of Patrick bringing me here. I never knew where Hofstra was or Long Island before coming here, and I'm blessed to have one of 300 Division I coaching jobs, and very appreciative of it every day.
Last thing I want to ask you here, Coach, because it's not often that I get to talk to a collegiate coach, because in the independent world, and I guess I can't really say independent now that we're a partner league, but in this
little
world, little shameless plug, but you know me, I've never been one to shy away from those. but it's one of those things, because recognizing a pro ball player, and it's one of those things, because you can just tell by watching, and the game has become so analytical. The game has become so, I don't want to say, I've got a coach on my staff who calls it machine driven, now more than anything else, as opposed to an eye test. And there are certain guys that you could look at, doesn't matter what the metrics show, you can't tell a ball player by a computer screen. And
right,
I think one of the prime examples, when I was looking through some of the guys that have made professional baseball and in the affiliated ranks, the guy that comes to mind and it's so funny because as soon as I saw his name, I remembered how talented he was. And he came after me at Hofstra. He graduated 2019, but Matt Reistetter.
Right.
Rice being a guy who went undrafted but ended up AAA in 2019. Just a ball player. When you're looking for those type of guys, because I see it now where what we're looking at this level is obviously, guys with former professional experience, but college players, older guys, but you're there looking at 16, 17, 18 year olds. When you look at those kids, what sticks out to you and says, this kid's got a career, this kid's got a future in this game?
I'll give you a guy that I've seen both ends of the stick, and it was a crazy story. So I have Vito Frisia, and he was drafted in 2019. And I just think you look at him, he's 6'4", 215, he's caught for 4 years, he first team all CAA, he hits 450-foot homers. In yours and my eyes, I would think that's a draft pick most days of the week. Mm-hmm. And then here he is, having the battle and get drafted in the 39th round. I'm yelling and shouting at scouts. Well, then he gets to professional baseball, and he's a 39th guy, and he goes down to Florida, and he's in spring training. And he's hitting, and he bats about 300, and he hits like 3 home runs, and he has a nice spring. After the spring, I talked to the scouting director of the Phillies and just wanted to follow up and see what kind of year Vito had. They loved him, and I'm like, oh, wow, it didn't seem like he had that great of a year, but their analytics guys loved him. Mm-hmm. They're like, his virtual on-base percentage was the second highest in our organization. And I was like, what the hell is that? And they're like, well, if he were to play on a normal-sized field with normal wind conditions and normal area, he would have had the second most home runs in our organization. And I'm like, well, man, that's awesome. Anything to keep him around longer, I'm all for. But point being is like, he went from a guy that we thought was super talented, and now he gets in there, and now he's an analytics guy that the analytic people love. And, because you can't really follow too much of analytics with college baseball players besides the numbers you read off the web pages. But now you can do TrackMan and, all their other stuff once they get there. And listen, I definitely think there's a place for it. I want to say that because back in our day when we were watching games, you would comment and you would say, oh, that fastball is really riding up on him or really getting in on them, or they're not really squaring him up at all tonight, and I don't see why they're not hitting him. Well, now we know that we're not hitting him, or their riding factor is the high spin rate. Mm-hmm. And before that, we didn't know that. And so as a coach, as a radio broadcaster, we'd be like, we just had a terrible night at the park. Well, at least now afterwards we can go look at TrackMan, and if the guy has a 2,500 spin rate, well, listen, we probably weren't going to hit him ever.
Right.
And so it has its place. It does have a spot for it. I don't think we can definitely look at a screen and be able to recruit a team, but I think, you can put two factors together and figure out what's the best direction to go and not get too heavy on one side or the other.
He's John Russo, head coach of our Hofstra University Pride. And as always, it's always fun talking baseball. It's always fun talking to you in general. Appreciate you spending some time, and I look forward to a 2021 that is as close to normal as possible, and that includes that includes me seeing a game in person. So I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely. Super proud of everything you've done, Christian. I can't be happier to be on this, and Please keep me posted if I can ever help with anything.
Thanks, Coach. I appreciate it.
Later, Christian.
All right, it's John Russo, head coach of Hofstra University on Long Island. It's a small Division I program, but again, I wanted to bring him on because there's so much about this stuff that I just don't I don't know, and it's tough to know from the outside looking in. So very thankful that John was able to do that. And I thought he brought up a really, really good point that I want to close out on, and that is last week was Mental Health Awareness Week. And for those of you, if you know somebody, if you are somebody who is dealing with any form of mental stress, anxiety, depression, whatever it is, please be there for them. Please, you know, talk with them. Just be an ear for them. Just be, you know, someone for them, because it certainly has heightened over the last 8 months. And I can't imagine what kids are going through. I can't imagine what high schoolers and what college kids are going through who had their entire worlds turned upside down, like all of us did, but in a completely different and maybe even a more tragic way earlier this year. That's going to do it for the show. As always, we appreciate your guys' time and listening and your support. Don't forget to share, subscribe, rate, and review the show, and find us on social media. Just search Caught Listening by Public House Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Send us your suggestions for future shows. We can't wait to have you guys as a part of it. Until next week, I'm Christian Heimel. You have been caught listening.
Me, but also you. The Pharaoh fast-forwards his favorite foreign film, Powder Donut. Okay, what's my line?
The only line I see here on the script is get options based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive.
Oh, man, that's a tongue twister, huh? I'm sorry, I'm going to need a few more minutes. Bulbous Walrus, the Bulbous Walrus.
The Name Your Price tool, only from Progressive.
The owl ran afoul of the comatose coxswain.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.